Now we begin the third section of the interview, tracks 12 of this disc through track 3 of the second disc. The conversation turns to criticisms of and challenges to Ken's work. As Ken explains and defends his theory, he passionately urges all of us to wake up to the truths that constantly surround us.
I'd like to get serious now with your permission.
Yeah.
And talk to you about a problem that I've had with respect to you for a long time. And that problem is why it is that more people don't acknowledge the grandeur and beauty and immensity and magnificence of your theoretical system. I mean, it's completely and absolutely obvious to me that you've done a better job of what you set out to do than anyone else ever has. You know, comparisons, I don't know about comparisons to Hegel and Kant, but certainly to William James seem to me to be totally appropriate at this point. You know, your marriage of science and mysticism, bringing together Western developmental psychology and Eastern spirituality, your ability to bring so many, many theorists into rough alignment through the orienting generalizations and your fantastic organizational skills, it's all unsurpassed. So what I'd like to know is, given that, why is it that so many people, it's not that just people end up getting pissed off at you, it's that more people aren't willing to read and acknowledge, or, you know, I'll point out your work to them, and I've been reading you since 1981, and go, this is totally amazing. He's blown my mind completely at least three separate times, you know, starting at the first time when I read The Holographic Paradigm and was staring at a washing machine when I was in college, and I was watching it go back and forth and thinking of the glycerin and the whole thing. And so in order to kind of get at this, and I have a suspicion, what I'd like to do is go through some of the criticisms that have been made towards you. And I, you know, obviously I'm doing this, doing it as a friend and not as a, as an enemy. The first one that comes up is that, you know, we talked about this before, the difficulty of your work. It's all over, it keeps changing, you seem to agree with everybody who comes along and you find a way of integrating them in. And I think that's a bogus, you know, objection. I mean, you know, read the works. It's like read the fucking manual and computer stuff. Read it, see it. It keeps getting better and more comprehensive. Mm-hmm. It must irk you a little bit, though, that people sort of don't get it.
Well, before I respond to that, let me get the first part out of the way and say there might be a couple of correct reasons that people are put off. A lot of what I'm saying could be wrong. We have to acknowledge that a lot of what I'm saying could be wrong. And people look at it and go, no, wrong, wrong, no, wrong, just wrong. And that's so that I could be wrong, and that's why they're not responding to it. Second item, of course, is that some people, at least on three books out of 20 books, there were some footnotes that were polemical, and some people have objected to those. I think that's a red herring myself, but I think it has to be acknowledged that made it difficult for some people to get into the argument because they were put off by this aspect in three of these books. That said, then, I would go to reasons on my favor of why I believe some people have trouble with it. And obviously, these are self-serving reasons. I mean, I've given the other, you know, reasons on the other side. Now I'll try to give some reasons in defense of myself. And the first that I've found is that if I just look at the people that respond to my work, versus those that don't. There's a general pattern. The people that respond to my work are those that have read just about as much as I have. In other words, they know what's out there, and they're very familiar with a large number of the things that I'm bringing together. And so they realize the importance of including all these various types of approaches and systems and ideas and try to bring them under one umbrella.
But you're providing a better map than anybody else.
That kind of thing. But the people, it's people like Mike Murphy, who himself, you know, has done a comparable kind of stuff. Someone like that will look at it and just get every single sentence from beginning to end. I mean, he just completely grocks the whole thing and then adds stuff to it along the way. Most of the criticism I get come from people that I think haven't done enough homework to realize why some of these things need to be included. The amount of research, for example, on the developmental aspects of the psyche cross-culturally, enormous amount of research on that. Most of it tends to be just tossed out by people. And I have a general rule, which gets into the second problem with why people have difficulty with my work, which is my general rule is everybody's right. And so I have a very different approach to bringing together different philosophies and different psychologies, which is that every single system ever offered has some degree of truth in it. As I sometimes put it, no mind can produce 100% error. Mm-hmm. Therefore, unfortunately, most of my contemporaries approach philosophy in this fashion. I've got a particular idea, and everybody else is wrong.
Right, it's either or, period.
Yeah, basically, that's the approach. And I don't think, I think everybody is right. Even the materialists and the reductionists, and they have very important things that need to be included. So I ask more a meta question, which is what system or pattern can honor the most number of truths from the most number of disciplines?
So you never met a question you didn't like.
Just like Will Rogers. And that's absolutely the truth. So people find, you know, behaviorism to Marxism to Adamism. I mean, there's some parts of all of that that I try to, in a very loose sense, based on orienting generalizations, mm-hmm. say, you know, let's just skip all the details right now. Generally speaking, these people are right about this general thing. Let's just make room for that. Let's just put that over here. And then the Buddhists, they're right. Let's put that over here. And then, oh, the physicists, okay, put them over here. And once you do that, you get this sort of composite map. And clearly nobody wants to confuse the map with the territory. But just as well, you don't want a fucked up incomplete map.
You want the best map you can get.
Right, which is what most people give you. So unfortunately, it therefore takes a lot of reading, a lot of homework to be able to relate to what I'm doing. People have to see the importance of honoring every known truth. If they don't have that impulse, they'll settle for a lesser partial truth because it's easier on them. It's not hard. They can just say, well, I'm a Buddhist and everybody else is wrong, and that's the way it is. Or I don't know about everybody else, but I'm not going to get into it with them. And so I understand that impulse, but it's not the impulse behind my work. Mm-hmm. The third thing I would say in my self-serving defense is that the research pretty clearly indicates that you have to be at second tier before these problems will even exist for you. Blue and orange and green aren't interested in integral comprehensive maps. That doesn't make sense to them. But something very dramatic happens when people move into second tier, into yellow and turquoise. All of a sudden, big pictures are the only things that satisfy. Because there's a comprehensiveness, there's a fullness, there's a drive to integrate and to honor and to include all these various approaches and systems and truths.
Or once you've left the farm and seen these other things, you can't just...
You can't go back. No. But again, run the demographics. Less than 2% of the population's at second tier. I've always been writing for those people. That's not a big audience, relatively speaking. So those are my three self-serving reasons for it. I would have to say, though, that I've been, you know, really gratified how in the last, particularly the last 5 years, this stuff has caught on. And now, you know, the books are now, if I sort of blow my own horn, they're now in close to 30 foreign languages.
All right.
We just went into Slovenian, Slovakian, Estonian, Latvian, Serbian. Apparently they're reading now that they've stopped raping and killing. Slovakian, Serbian, Bulgarian. So with 20 books and up to 34 languages, I'm the most translated academic writer in America.
And you're kind of cute, too.
It's kind of cute, yeah.
No, you are.
Yeah, that's kind of fun. And it's, you know, we've got a sitting president and sitting vice presidents endorse this work. I mean, it's come a long way. It's really come a long way. Okay. And I see it sort of the signs of it increasing are really happening quite rapidly, actually.